Chapter 8. This driver seems nuts, Marcia thinks, as the bargain budget bus veers around the corner, going what must be 75 miles per hour, and they're not even on I-95 yet. Slow down, one panicked rider yells from the back, but the Hispanic man at the wheel ignores them. It's hot as hell on board, and even though there's a no-smoking sign prominently displayed in the front, the air still smells like stale cigarette smoke. Marcia has managed to get an aisle seat halfway back, but she has to sit next to a white man who insists on talking. He introduces himself as Mr. Conrad and goes on to explain he's a traveling trinket salesman. Marcia nods her head politely but says nothing the further the conversation, but that doesn't stop his mouth. As the driver pulls onto 95 without the slightest effort to merge safely, other motorists blare their horns and the passengers on board let out howls of protest. But Mr. Conrad is oblivious to their panic and pulls out his little show kit of items that Marcia may be interested in purchasing. Shirt backwards yells from the rear of the bus, "Hey, there's no toilet paper in the bathroom!" But the driver just holds up a scrawled sign reading "No English." Big Marge, still holding blanket and a dirty diaper in one hand, bellows back, "So what do we wipe up our baby's poo-poo with?" But the driver disregards her too as he answers his cell phone and starts shouting angrily into it in Spanish. "These little babies won't break the bank or nothing," explains Mr. Conrad as he shows Marcia a New Jersey Turnpike key ring. "Only 99 cents. "No thanks," says Marcia, attempting to get up to move, but finding one of her feet actually stuck to the floor in what must have been a large soft drink spill that was never cleaned up properly. "How about a gimp bracelet?" he offers, undaunted. "I made it myself." "I'm not shopping for anything," Marcia responds, with what she hopes is off-putting contempt. But this guy goes for the hard sell. "Look," he says in a pushy voice, pulling out a baggie of plastic collectible charms. "You don't even have to buy a gumball to get one. 50 prizes, 50 cents. Marcia turns away in a fury. This is a test, she thinks. She escaped Dutch Village for this? The Italian senior citizen couple have managed to find two seats together across the aisle and one row back from Marcia. But one of the cushions is malfunctioning, and the entire bottom of the chair keeps snapping up and pinning the tiny woman in its grips. The husband is panicked and keeps trying to help her, but every time he pries the seat back down, the driver, who now appears to be texting, swerves around another vehicle and the seat snaps back up like a mousetrap. The wife starts yelling and her husband joins in, but the driver, now purple-faced in rage, is banging his cell phone angrily on the steering wheel and pays them no mind. Marcia decides she likes him. He's like her. He lives dangerously. Across the aisle, through the window, Marcia sees cars and trucks being whizzed by, left behind by the bus's speed. Good! She'll get to New York in record time. The native Hawaiian lady has managed to get a seat up front, but next to her is a real slob of a white man who sits in his window seat with full man spread, his ham hock thighs wide open, pushing the uncomplaining woman almost out of her seat into the aisle. Her cat starts hissing and clawing the wires of the cage, and the big guy lets out a groan of overheated annoyance and rips off his t-shirt. He's now totally topless without the slightest trace of embarrassment. Still, the woman doesn't complain and tries to quiet her cat lovingly. "Shh, Banjo," she coos with little success. "Jesus Christ," the sweat hog yells. "She's got a rabid animal with her." "It's just a little pussycat," she tries to reason back. But her cat lets out an ungodly shriek and goes into coital crouch position, which can mean only one thing. It's female, and it's in heat. "Now the cat's trying to fuck me," he cries out in full meltdown mode. Little Blanket finally wakes up from all the hubbub and lets out a small cry, a whimper, really. But suddenly Mr. Conrad loses his "Shut that fucker up," he yells with such hostility that even Marcia is shocked. "He's just a baby, mister," Big Marge hollers from the rear, shielding the infant protectively in her arms before softly crooning the Beat It song inside her agitated child's ears. "Hey, that's my son you're talking about," shirt backwards bellows, suddenly the macho one, even though his backward T-shirt semi-strangles the word in his throat as he speaks. How am I supposed to make a sale with a rotten fucking baby? Shrieking, shouts back Mr. Conrad. I'm not interested in your wares, sir, Marcia hastily volunteers loudly, hoping to deflect attention away from her. The driver, oblivious to the drama on board, is tailgating a car in the fast lane, which is already going 10 miles or more over the speed limit. Other bus passengers are watching in alarm, braking in their own seats, as if that would telegraph the message to the crazy driver to slow down. Suddenly, this madman veers into the slow lane to pass, but there's another car going the normal speed in front of him, so without putting on any turn signals, he careens onto the shoulder lane and narrowly misses a family whose dad is changing a flat tire. All the riders on the bus lurch forward and scream. Blanket finally lets out a real cry. Muzzle that little cocksucker, shouts Mr. Conrad, spittle flying from his mouth, arms waving in the air like a complete monster. Marcia has had enough. She quickly kicks open the salesman's show kit on the floor, reaches down, and deftly pockets the velvet money pouch she spotted earlier when he was showboating his worthless junk. Chump change, but maybe this'll change this chump. She pries her other foot off the flypaper-like sticky floor and moves to another seat across the aisle a few rows back. On the way, she sees that the elderly Italian-American woman has given up and sits crushed in the V-shape of the faulty Alivorter bus seat as her husband meekly holds her hand in emotional support. The smoke alarm in the bathroom in the back of the bus goes off, and Brud, the pimple-faced one who got on when Marcia did, comes flying out with a huge cloud of smoke following him. It's like a chimney in there, he announces with a laugh, hoping his bad word usage will excuse his triggering of the annoyingly loud beeping fire alarm. The bus driver seems unfazed, and rather than dealing with it, lights up his own cigarette and accelerates, swerving past trucks, even an ambulance. Just when Marcia is about to sit back and finally enjoy this terror ride, she sees the cat lady inserting a Q-tip into the vagina of her still-howling in-heat pussycat and moving it rhythmically in and out. Even the topless oaf seated next to her is shocked into silence and watches, transfixed. Guess what? All that insertion works. The cat lets out one final orgasmic yowl and then shuts up. Marcia never knew there was such a thing as feline afterglow, but she sure does now. When she looks back up, all she sees through the bus's windshield is sudden, unexpected fog, then the back of a stopped truck. She doesn't even have time to brace. Accident ahead, Daryl hears his own penis, excuse me, Richard, yell through the tight restraints of his underpants. Wow, his wiener is better than Google Maps. He lets him out with one frantic zip of his pants, and even though any form of crotch movement still hurts, it's worth it. Roger, yells back Daryl, getting used to the two-way communications with his damaged privates. And wouldn't you know it, there is a big accident ahead. Move over, Jeannie Dixon. Hello, Edgar Casey. Take a hike, Uri Geller. His name is Richard, and he's psychic supreme. A bargain budget bus lies on its side. Luggage is strewn all over the highway. There are still some bodies in all three lanes, and fire trucks and ambulance workers are doing their best to rescue the survivors. Three dead, many injured, announces Richard, through the tiny lips of the pee hole at the end of Daryl's in-recovery unit, in a voice that is self-assured without being overbearing. Take cover, Daryl commands in a friendly voice as they are forced to slow down their Ford in this building traffic jam, fast-breaking news event. Copy that, his eager appendage answers before stealthily shrinking back inside Daryl's pants to hide. They're not crazy. They're a team, and they're both going to do Marcia. Marcia, Marcia, Bo Barcia, Banana Fana, Fo Farcia, Fee Fi Mo Marcia, Marcia. Hey, Richard can even sing. She's banged up a little, but as far as Marcia can tell, she has no broken bones. She got off easy. It's hard to get your bearings when the vehicle you were riding in has overturned on its side. But she can still see out because there's a big hole on the other side of the aisle where the bus must have crashed into a guardrail and flipped over. It's getting dark out, but she can sense that the passengers sitting across from her fell on top of the fellow bus riders in her row. Luckily, nobody landed on her. Luggage that was thrown from the bus lay outside on the highway. Some of it was on fire. As she crawls her way across the half-overturned seats toward the hole, she climbs over that idiot trinket salesman who now looks in really bad shape, covered in blood with an ugly white bone sticking out of one of his arms. He's trying to retrieve his stupid baggie of prizes that must have flown from his hands and burst open when they crashed. His worthless little treasures litter other bodies, many unconscious, but this doesn't stop him from trying to gather them up. Marcia feels her knee go right in his open mouth just as he cries out in pain for the first time. Big Marge's excess adipose tissue saved not only her but Shirt backwards too by cushioning their bodies on impact. Stunned to be alive, they try to climb over the seats looking for their baby. "Blanket, blanket," they both yell, but Marcia doesn't see the infant anywhere. The native Hawaiian woman is unconscious but still breathing. At least she can't worry about her horny cat. As Marcia drags herself over the lady's limp body, she's amazed to see close up that her hairdo that looks so freshly done is actually a wig. Marcia gives it a yank, and after a couple of tries, the bobby pins give way and the hairpiece is hers. She slaps it on over her own short hair and accepts the fact that without a mirror, it may be on crooked. But so what? She's already feeling a new identity washing over her, and that's all that counts. She's a method actress through and through. Brud the chain smoker and the shirtless manspread guy are nowhere to be seen, so presumably they were thrown from the bus. Good. If Marcia had to pick, they'd be the dead ones. The elderly Italian couple are alive, but their journey has turned even more humiliating. Marcia can see both of them outside the bus, but the older lady is upside down in a tree, still stuck in her malfunctioning seat, as her husband tries to comfort her while a fireman is putting up a ladder for rescue. Wouldn't you know it, the driver seems to be uninjured, and yep, he's back on the phone, still bitching to whomever he's been having a beef with the whole trip. Marcia picks through all the hand luggage and pocketbooks that had fallen from the overhead bins and rifles through a few wallets for cash. There are even some shitty saltine crackers in a lunch bag that must have been left uneaten by one of the riders. Beggars can't be choosers. She's hungry. Yay! There are a couple of plastic packages of ketchup inside, too, that will come in handy right now for special effects to make herself look more injured. The trinket salesman sees her in her ill-fitting wig, smearing the fake blood on her forehead, and clutches his plastic treasures to his chest as if they were gold, as if anybody would want them. Marcia swallows the cracker and then the next one. She's glad there's not a third. That could lead to a bowel movement larger than she'd be comfortable with. She hasn't had to wipe in over 10 years and plans to keep it that way. As she proceeds to the nearest exit, which is now the jagged hole in the side of the bus, she spots Blanket where he's landed, lying atop a pile of dirty laundry spilled out of a bag. The goddamn baby is cooing and laughing, uninjured except for a big pen stuck in the side of his head. Marcia does what any good Samaritan would do and pulls it out in one quick yank. The infant starts howling, but it's all a happy ending for Big Marge and Shirt backwards. Blanket is alive. Beat it, they sing in unglued parental domination, happy as can be under these very special conditions. Marcia flinches when the two ambulance attendants, who must have succeeded in prying open the front door of the bus, grab her from behind. "You're in shock," one of them says to her. "We're taking you to the hospital," the other announces, like he's some kind of knight in shining armor. That's just what Marcia wants to hear. She's sure there's an all-points bulletin out on her, and now she can hide in plain sight in the emergency room. "What happened? Where am I?" she moans convincingly, holding her bleeding head as they begin to load her onto a stretcher. Here's the perfect moment to deftly pick the wallet out of the medic's back pants pocket. One would think a trained professional would know better than to carry his valuables while working an accident, but not this guy. And then she sees it, that darn cat. Banjo might have had 9 lives, but this was definitely not her 10th.